Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And so it's one of these strange things that I'm going to start this podcast and right from the beginning I'm thinking, well, what do I have to say about this book? I'm not really sure I've got that much to say about this book, but then these episodes where I think I don't have very much to say seem to be the ones that I go on longer. I can't remember who made the quote or who wrote this. He says, well, I'm writing this letter to you, and if I had more time to spend on it, it would be shorter. Or, you know, I'm paraphrasing the quote to know that, like, if I actually make lots of notes on a topic, I can generally, like, put these things into my head, you know, these notes into my head and you know, and work out what I'm going to talk about and what I'm going to, you know, what the things I'm going to concentrate on. It's generally a little bit more structured and easier for me to get through. Unfortunately, my only notes for this podcast are pretty much, you know, the names of the stories, and also to tell you that I don't have any notes or not really quite sure how I'm going to do this podcast, because this is a follow-up. It's a sequel. It's and also prequel at the same time to a book that I previously reviewed. A guy called Hugh Howey wrote a short story called Wool, and then he wrote another short story called something else, and then he wrote another short story, and then he collected together these series of short stories together into one Kindle book called The Wool Omnibus. But he kept on writing short stories in that same series, in that same world, and collected them together. And this time it's called The Shift Omnibus, because there's these three short stories called First Shift, Second Shift, and Third Shift. Actually, they've got specific names, a bit more specific names. It's one of those things. Okay, so I'm gonna be reviewing a book which is a prequel and a sequel to previous stories. The stories are split up into two, and the worst thing is that each of these stories has some kind of twist, and the previous stories also had twists in each one of them, and in the previous ones, some of the twists were he doesn't die in the end, and sometimes the twist was he does die in the end. So it's going to be really tricky, because again, in this, there's lots of twists, there's lots of things, and one of the main challenges for me is to do spoilers. Is not to do spoilers, is to talk about books in a way that I can recommend them or unrecommend them without giving away major story points and giving away what happens to characters and things like that. So this is really tricky, because I want to be going, well, this character is now doing this, and this character doing this. But the thing is, if you read The Wool Omnibus, you already know those different characters, and I could just say the sheriff did this or the sheriff did that, and it doesn't give away which sheriff, because of course that story revolves around, or one of the stories revolves around a sheriff, and later on in the book they need another sheriff, but I don't want to give away when the sheriffs go in and out, because there's a number of different sheriffs throughout the book. Anyway, again, that's not giving too much away at that point, but yeah, but what can I do about this? And people have said to me, hey, you should just do a spoilerific episode. A few people have messaged me saying, this is what we want. We want spoilerific episodes. And I will do those, but it's nice to do like a non-spoiler episode before I do a spoiler episode, or get the non-spoiler stuff out of the way first. And then I realised that me and Juliana, when we do a book that I've already reviewed, so like with Dune, we could just do a big spoilerific review of Dune and Hyperion, because I've already done like the normal non-spoiler episode already and then do the spoilers. But I think with these series, it would make sense for me when I read the next book, I think it's just going to be the last book in this Wool Shift silo series, that this last omnibus of stories, which I think apparently Hugh Howey has already written most of it, and he's going to be putting it out at the end of this year after releasing each story individually. I think for that one I will do a big spoilerific discussion of the full series, as sort of like a what do you call it? There's another podcast I listen to. They say we'll do a final thoughts. This is on the Geek Nights podcast. We could talk about it here and talk about it there, but then we'll do a final thoughts where we'll just presume that you have also watched this TV series or read this book all the way through, and we're just going to discuss it without worrying about spoilers. So I'll probably do that for the last book in the series to wrap up the full thing. So let's get to it. So there's the Wool is set in a nuclear fallout bunker, but it's absolutely massive. It's 200 levels high, and there's 10 meters between each level, so there's a lot of space in between, and there's stuff and more stuff's happening, and it's really dangerous outside, and stuff happens. And again, I don't want to give too much away, but what I do want to talk about is like the idea that there was lots of different questions that you have, like, and this is what the first book is about, all these characters going, well, what's actually really going on? What's really going on here? Why are we down here? What's our history? What's really outside? And there's obviously these layers and layers of conspiracy theories and layers of conspiracy non-theories, actual conspiracies, and all these other kind of levels of control. So there was lots of different ideas that I had while I was, you know, when I was reading that first book. I was like, okay, well, I guess the silo, one thing I mentioned on the previous episode in the series when I reviewed Wool, I said, well, I presume there's different levels of technology within it. So it felt like the silo itself had been built in like maybe the 1970s or 80s. And then there was much, much later technology that had put into it. So there's these different levels of technology in that way. It turns out that's actually a wrong guess, because we get a lot of backstory. And there's a few other guesses that I had, sort of like, some like presumptions in my own brain, which was like, well, I just presume it's like this, and this is what it's like. But of course, that's what this whole series is about. Every new short story in these collections, in these omnibuses, actually reveals a little bit more and said, ah, you thought it was going to be like this, but it was actually like this. And you know, there's ways to do these well, and there's ways to do them not well. You know, these kind of twists. What I really like is when the twist happens and I'm like, yes, I knew it was going to be like that. Because then, of course, I feel very clever. And then there's the other kind of twist where the twist is so clever it makes me feel stupid. But I get enjoyment out of both kinds of twists, and that's what we get here. So, So there was this underground silo. Now, one of the twists, I'm kind of going to give away for the previous book, for the Wool Omnibus rather than the Shift Omnibus, is that there isn't just one underground silo. There isn't just one underground bunker. There is more than one. And that's pretty all I need to say about that. I mean, it's quite obvious once you actually do it, you hear about different stuff going on in the background. So there's actually a control silo, because there's one silo where people are getting on with life and they're having to, you know, survive, and they've got to hang around until the nuclear disaster is over and all the radiation outside is cleared up, and then they can go back out and repopulate the world, hopefully. Oh, that's the idea. But there isn't just one. There's kind of like another one, which is the control silo, and they actually have a different way of lasting the many, many years until the radiation outside is gone and they can go back outside. So there's actually a few different ways. I mean, and they actually mention it here as well. Like, there's different ways to reach the stars. If you're going to go to the stars, there's different ways to get there and still have humans alive on board the ship when you get there. Of course, one idea is don't take humans, just send robots. But of course, that doesn't help in this case. Well, I guess there's what's the book? I think the Altered Carbon book by Richard Morgan. The idea is there. You send the robots, and the robots take along machines, and then they build replicators, and then those replicators build they're taking along like human sperm, or maybe just the information to rebuild the DNA at the other end, and then they drop down and you can actually populate a planet with humans on the other end by only sending a very, very small package, but a small package with lots and lots and lots of information. And the other thing is like, well, maybe you need to upload your brain into a computer. I guess the same thing, sending information. The other one is like, okay, you're going to live a really, 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 really long time, like the Lazarus Long kind of thing. But also in the same way, you can have a generation ship. So people live and die, and then more people are born, and they live and die, and then more people are born. And then thousands of years later, the far, 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 far descendants of the people that you left behind are still there. Or, of course, the other idea is cold sleep. So you put people to sleep, and at the other end, they come out of hibernation, and ha, they're still there. Now, the first story in this series is called First Shift. First Shift, was it Legacy? No, that's the other one. It's called First Shift Prologue. No, First Shift Legacy. Yes, it is First Shift Legacy. My notes are correct. So this begins with somebody waking up, and it's like, welcome. You're the guy in charge of this silo, and you're the guy who's overseeing the other silo. And he's like, oh, really? Oh, okay, well, I didn't know that was going to be my job. Okay, but let's just do this anyway. And this guy's name is Troy, and he wakes up and he doesn't quite remember how he's going to be there, but it soon comes to light that nobody is really quite sure what they're doing there. But everyone wakes up, spends one shift, which is 6 months, working, overseeing their own silo and overseeing the other silo. And then they go back to sleep again for another 10 years or 50 years or however long it takes. And they try and make it so each people who wakes up, they're not on the same, they're not on shift with anybody else, and nobody really knows who each other is. And they're obviously, there's obviously some kind of mind control going on there, but kind of like self-aware mind control, because right at the beginning, one person says, "Hey, my name's Troy." And the other one goes, It's like, well, are you not going to introduce yourself? And it works out that actually names don't matter. All these people are doing, they're waking up, they're doing their job, and then going back to sleep again, because the only thing that matters is to get through to the very end. And again, this is not like the generation ship, this is the cold sleep ship. So I really like the way that this was set up to show the different approaches for lasting a long time, that the people in control want to be there all the time. But the idea is being, if anything goes wrong, they can, like a Harry Seldon kind of figure, they can pop out of cold sleep or just turn up again and go, ah, yes, we need to sort this out with society and sort this out. That's it. Okay, now I'm going to go back to sleep again. Although, of course, Harry Seldon wasn't asleep. He was a hologram, recorded hologram or something like that. Anyway, so that's one half of this, is this character getting up, and again, because he's got this weird kind of memory stuff, he's not quite sure what's going on. He's looking for answers too, about like why he's been given this job. He doesn't understand, like when he's woken up, he's like, really, is this my job? Oh, I didn't expect it to be. I was promoted at the last minute. I wasn't meant to be in this here in this silo. And then at the same time, you've got this another story, almost like a complementary story, which is actually set in the 21st century, so like a long time before, and it's like a lot of backstory. It's a lot of prequel stuff. So it tells the story of Donnie. And Donnie is a guy who is he's a new politician. He's a new, I think he's a congressman from Atlanta, and he signs up and he's given this job. And of course, as the Wool Omnibus, we know what he's being involved in, but at the time he doesn't know what he's being involved in. So he's like, oh yes, you used to be an architect, right? Yes. Well, okay. Check this out. We want you to design like an inside out building that goes down 200 levels into the ground. And he's like, oh, really? What's this for? Oh, yeah, it's for this, blah, blah, blah. And it's passed off in different ways. And again, this is quite interesting in many ways, because the two stories go together very well. It's like it's not just like, oh, OK, well, the character in this story is going to what he does is going to influence what happens in this other story, because these two stories are told like many, many years apart, but it's alternating chapters. There's a chapter in the 21st century, there's a chapter in the 22nd century, a chapter in the 21st, and it keeps going back between, you know, what happens in the command silo and also what happened like before it was even built, and how it was built and how it got down in there. So one thing I really liked is that there's lots more going on than just going, oh, well, here's a story, here's another. There's some really, really good little like character moments like across time, and thematic moments across time. Like one person will take a drink, and in the next, well, let's say like he'll raise a glass and make a toast, and in the next story, 50 years later, however many years later it is, someone will do a similar thing and then go back, and then someone, you know, and it will go backwards and forwards between them. And I really like the way that it was tied together in the style of writing, and that they had like these echoing themes backwards and forwards between these two stories. However, what was not great was the switching. And I know this is the main point of the story, is that we're going to switch from this chapter to that chapter, this chapter to that chapter, and these alternating chapters are going to go backwards and forwards through time and backwards and forwards between these two different characters, and you see how the actions of one are going to pay off in the other, and what one sets up is going to pay off in the other, and they kind of reveal information about each other as they go through, and the storylines and the things that they face and the situations that they get themselves into. But it was really, really jarring. Like, the tone is very, very different, because one, there's like this weird kind of like love triangle going on. You think, well, what's going to happen here? Is it going to focus more on the relationships, or is it going to focus more on this? And there's a thing about this guy with his wife, and there's a thing with the dog, and you just go, well, that's one thing. And then the other one is this weird kind of psychodrama where this guy is all paranoid and under control and is having to make these really difficult command decisions. And every time it switched, it was very jarring. And another thing which I want to talk about a little bit later on is that it just revealed too much. Anytime that it was in the silo, I was really interested, because that's what I want the story to be about. And I didn't really want it to be about senators and congressmen in the United States and backroom deals and getting stuff done and people doing this and people like, I wasn't really so much interested in that. It was good that we got it revealed to us, but also in a way it's better to keep the mystery intact. What I really liked about Wool is that people go, oh yeah, we've been in here for ages, and people go, well, how long have we been in the silo? And other people go, well, I'm not really sure. How long have we been here? I don't know. How long have we got to go? Oh, I don't know. Where did it come from? I don't know. What's down there? I don't know. Why can we only do this? Why are the rules for this? I don't know. Why is it set up this way? Oh, I don't know. And I really like that. Oh, I don't know. It kind of, like, that mystery that is still there, that intact mystery, makes it really fascinating and makes the world more believable and real. Like, if you were just to go, like, okay, here, back in the beginning, before, like, say, in 1984, you're going, well, there's Eurasia and East Asia and Oceania and this and that, and you kind of get, like, kind of get what's going on, but, like, how did they get to pre-Second World War, or, you know, the history that we knew? How did we then get to the 19, after the Second World War, or whenever the history diverged? Of course, it was written for the future, but, you know, when did history diverge until we got to the 1984 world in that novel? And the route that it took there, I like the mystery that they're saying, oh, well, did you know they invented helicopters? Really? No, everyone goes, oh, well, they invented helicopters. They also invented airplanes. It's like, really, does Big Brother really go in the back that far? And even the people themselves aren't really sure what's going on. I like that mystery. And sometimes it's better to leave it intact. But more on that later. So the first shift I thought was an okay story. Not, I don't think it's as good as any of the stories in Wool, in the Wool omnibus, but it's very well written. I enjoy the characters, I enjoy the story, but like I say, it was a good story at the expense of the mystery that we already had from Wool, and I kind of wanted that mystery to stick around. So it was okay, but it did feel like it was treading ground. It was just filling us in. It was like, oh, remember this stuff? Well, let's get you up a bit of speed on that. And now let's really start. So the second shift is the second story. It's called Order, Second Shift Order. And this is by far the best story in this three-story omnibus, the shift omnibus. First of all, we meet Mission, and Mission is a guy in the non-control silo. And he's a pretty normal kid, and he's going, you know, he's become a porter, so he walks up and down these 200 levels of the silo, and he just carries stuff up and down, and he knows that's what he's going to do for the rest of his life, and he knows that his legs are going to give out, but then, you know, he'll have seniority and he won't have to carry the heavy stuff, he can carry the lighter stuff, and, you know, that's what you get with seniority and with bad knees. And he's looking at a girlfriend, he's like, oh, maybe I'll get together with a girl, this girl, and this and that. And it's actually really, really nice, because this is exactly the kind of stuff that was in Wool that I really enjoyed, like normal people in a situation that they're not quite sure of. And because this is happening in the same silo as, like, all the main action in Wool, or, like, all, like, the main characters in Wool are in this silo, and that kind of tells the story that there may be revolt, maybe there won't be a revolt. And this is actually set, this is more prequel, this is more backstory, so this is set in the past. So we know that there was previous revolts in the Wool silo, and this kind of tells the story of it, and because, again, Hugh Howey does these great things that you're never quite sure if the character's going to get through to the end, and this is a character we don't know before. We don't know this one, a guy called Mission, which I think is a really fun name, and he does this, he goes here and goes there, and needs to do this, and needs to do that, and, like, That I thought was a really great stuff. And now you've got these alternating chapters. Of course, it's not one chapter here, one chapter there, one chapter here, one chapter there. It's sort of like a few chapters with this guy. And then you also get along, you follow along what's happening in the control silo. And we see someone trying to work out if the silo is going to collapse, or if it's going to be saved, or if it's, you know, if it's worth saving. Not really quite sure. And then the guys in the control silo, they've got other issues, personal issues that they want to go on to. And then there's a really great twist at the end of this. So this is actually exactly what I want. Of course, it's everything I liked from the first omnibus. We've got the good situation of people who don't know what's going on, trying to find out what's going on, or even not trying to find out what's going on, but stuff stuff. And now we have more answers. It's like going, hey, remember this scene from Wool? Okay, now you already know everything that's going on. Check it out from this point of view. Also, there's some really good twist at the end, and it's an actual twist. It's not just like, and hey, guess what? This is some different information that you didn't think or that you thought wasn't there. There's some really great character moments, and what happens to one of the main characters at the end I thought was pretty remarkable, and then just threw everything else. And I was just like, oh, so this idea that I had in Wool about the atmosphere outside is sort of like, ah, that's something that I thought might be there, but it wasn't there, and what's going on? And it seems to be a lot deeper than I thought, or like, put it this way, I guessed it could be something like this, and yes, it is something like that. Again, I don't want to give too much away. So Second Shift, really, really good. If as a story itself, I'd give that maybe 4.5 stars. And now onto my next note, which is the last story, which is Third Shift Pact. It's called Pact. So what have we got? We've got Legacy, Order, and Pact. And these things are little code words among the people in the command silo. They have the code, they have the pact, they have the legacy, they have this rule book, which I think, or maybe they just called the code. It's like a Bible of orders that they have to follow and all this kind of stuff. So these different concepts, these different things, these different collection of information, that's the legacy and things that they're holding on to be able to, you know, so when they have to go out and rebuild the world, they have the legacy, which is this these bits of information, and the pact is the thing that's going to get them through there. And it's like, yes, it's going to be difficult, but we'll all stick together with this pact, and then we'll all make it through to the end. It's great. So so Third Shift is Pact, and again, the tone of the story shifts in a way which I didn't like very much at all, because now we go back and we get some more prequel stuff, and this has all been prequel, it's all leading up, because the end of the third shift, the end of the third story, the last story of the shift omnibus, pretty much finishes at the same point as the Wool omnibus finishes. So theoretically, I guess you could read them. Well, I guess you have to read them in this order, otherwise the wool would be spoiled. But then I'm thinking, well, if we read them in this order that's actually been presented to us, it's kind of spoiled as well. This story's been spoiled, because we pick up and it's not just backstory of, like, here's the very, very far distant history of, like, the command silo or the Wool silo. Here's a little bit of past, here's a previous revolt that actually happened. So we can see what kind of stuff could have happened in the direction that it could have gone when we see the events that take place in the Wool omnibus. But here in Third Shift Pact, we follow the story of a side character from the last few stories of the Wool omnibus, and it's a nice story. It's interesting enough. It's okay, but ultimately nothing is actually revealed either about the setup. But there's a few little bits and pieces. There's like one little bit, like a mention of a mystery right at the beginning. It's like, hey guys, there's still this other thing going on over here, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that from the previous one. It's like, oh, is it okay? So there's this single mention of a mystery near the beginning, and then nothing else really. No character moments. Like, put it this way, we already know this character and what he's going to be like in the future. So we know this isn't a character who is going to die. Because, like, again, we're going to meet him in the prequel. It's just prequel stuff. And then I was thinking, well, why do we focus on this person? It's like they fulfilled their role perfectly well in their first stories, in their first outing in Wool. And I never once thought, hey, you know, I need to know what this guy got up to, guy, girl, whatever, this guy got up to before now. Well, I did, but I was kind of thinking, well, yeah, I kind of wonder what he was getting up to, he, she was getting up to, but it kind of, in a way, kind of better remained a mystery. There are some really good scenes, there is some really nice writing, but it felt like, again, just kind of treading ground, a little bit like the first story, the First Shift Order. It felt sometimes like, well, aren't we just treading ground here? We know what's going to happen with these characters. We know where it's going to lead up to. And then again, every few chapters, we flick back to the command silo. But put it this way, in First Shift, what was happening in command and what was happening outside of command was like, you know, many, many years apart. In the middle story, it isn't many years apart. Actually, what's happening in the command silo is directly opposite. So it's actually chronological. Even though we're switching back between different scenes, it is quite chronological. And now here in Third Shift, it's not chronological. So the things that are going on in the command silo doesn't really impact what's going on in the other silo yet again. So, like, we know this. You know, there's this, the silo is threatening to revolt again, because it's the same, because pretty much it catches up with the end of Wool. So the same stuff that was happening in Wool is now happening, but we're also seeing it from the point of view of the command silo. But here's the problem. We know that the command silo didn't intervene, because while we kind of knew it was there, we knew that there was some other entity that was outside of the Wool silo. We knew that there's something else going on there. But we know that they didn't intervene. So now we read the story of somebody in command not intervening. So they're kind of constantly distracted by their own personal story. And their own personal story is really good. And the other subplots that are going on in the command silo, again, really interesting stuff. But, like, and the characters make, one specific character make some decisions which I found were, like, really interesting and really surprising and very entertaining, very sad and disturbing, like, all at the same time. So it's really awesome writing. There's some really good scenes there. And because you've got this whole thing, you know, people are asleep, and he's like, well, who do I need to wake up to help me through this situation? And who else can I wake up to get through? And what are they going to do? But I've got to do it in secret. And some really good stuff there. But it was always clashing with, I mean, the idea was like, well, there's this other stuff going on that they're kind of just ignoring. And we know that he has to keep ignoring it, because we know that he didn't have any effect on that, because I read Wool. And so it's kind of like, it trivializes, like, well, it doesn't trivialize, but it's like, well, look, if you're meant to be in command, either command, or why is your really interesting story being interrupted all the time by going, well, you know, what's happening over there in the Wool silo, you know? And it's like, oh, well, we'll just keep an eye on it. And then not really keeping the eye on it, and then carrying on anyway. And it was also, that really great story in the command side was also being interrupted by this backstory from this other secondary character, which didn't really work out. And like I say, I knew how both of those stories were going to work out. Or put it this way, I know what's going to happen with this previous character, and I know what's going to happen in the Wool silo, because we'd read those before. And then what was going on in the command silo was interesting enough to be its own story. I didn't see why it had to be kept being interrupted by these previous backstory stuff. And there was a twist. There was a really good twist at the beginning. Like, I thought that was really good. And then there was some twists throughout. But by the eighth Hugh Howey short story set in this world, I'm like, well, can this twist really surprise me anymore? I'm not sure. Maybe I'm just used to it now. And again, I like to be really surprised. I like to be made feel stupid by the twist. But in this story, I was just like, okay, it felt more like, didn't feel like twist. It felt more like just like, we're going to just reveal some information now. And you get these, again, different characters going, well, we need to find out about this. But it kind of just reminded me of better mysteries that I'd read about in the past in this series. And a twist has to be more than just a revelation of some information. You've got to kind of feel like there's going to be some big impact going forward. If it's just like, Luke, I am your father, and you just go, oh, turns out he's his father. No, but it has to have that follow through. You have to keep going. Well, okay, so in the future, what is going to change? And there's some other twists, you know, like there's the Usual Suspects. I thought the twist in the Usual Suspects was amazing, but it kind of didn't really, it's kind of like almost a meaningless twist, because it just goes, well, turns out what you thought was going on wasn't going on. But there's nothing that made me think, oh, wow, this is going to really change those people's lives in the future. It seems like one person is just going to carry on as they were before, and the other person is just going to go, don't, I was stupid. I guess I'll be less stupid in the future. Or, I didn't have all the facts. I guess now I have the facts. That's what it felt like in The Usual Suspects, but like the good twist, you actually, something happens, you know, like, wow, this changes everything for all these characters. Or maybe not everything for all the characters, but it has to be. Oh, I was going to talk about the characters. I have one other note here. It's called X-Ray. It says X-Ray. I didn't realize this because I was reading this on the Kindle app for my iPhone on my iPhone. There's always this little thing called X-Ray, and I was wondering, what's X-Ray? And I never really looked it up, but it always is like, X-Ray, not available for this title. X-Ray, not available for this title. But here, it's available, and I clicked on it, and it's and it goes, so I can go here, on the book. It says there's 57 people, and it just lists all the names and where they're mentioned in the books. You've got Ali, Allison, Amanda, Anna, Barbara, Bernard, Biggers, Bradley, Cam, Carlton, Carter, Charles, you know, and these are all just characters through, and it shows you exactly where they're mentioned, how much they're mentioned, or I guess it's by like how, which pages or which locations in the book, and it's really good. And also they've got these terms, so I can see Atlanta, Boston, Florida, these are people, grow lights, Iran, level 12, mission, what else? Oklahoma, yeah. South Carolina, Tennessee. These are sort of like a lot of the terms that come up here in the beginning of the book. Water plant, Tupperware. Yeah, so it's pretty great that you can actually look through and see these lots of different people, all the different character names, 57 different character names in this book. Anyway, I quite like that. So when I read Kindle books in the future, hopefully they'll also be X-ray enabled. Anyway, that's what I was going to say about the characters. I would talk about the individual characters. All I can say is that there are some very interesting characters in this book, well worth reading about. The writing is very good. I really love Hugh Howey's writing. I just think at this point, the stories kind of little bit kind of collapse under their own weight. Which brings me, I might as well just go straight on now to the last section, which I my last note here. Which is previous to the previous one. Anyway, my last note is just says belief. Because on my previous review of Hugh Howey's book Wool, I talked quite a lot about belief, and it's because that book seemed to be always like these different characters in these different situations, and what they believed was true may or may not be true. It was all about, it seemed to be for me a book about like, shall I act on my beliefs? Shall I not act on my beliefs? What did this person believe and when they acted on it, what happened, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And you, if you just even read the very first story of Wool, you'll realize that's what it is. Now, so what goes like this. Imagine you're in a character in the Wool silo. And of course, at the end of Wool, we know more than we did at the beginning of Wool. But we kind of need to know more. Like, when you want to know about the backstory, what do you want to know about your own history, where can you go to? And you think, well, let's go to the history books. But we already know in there that the history books are wrong. It's like, you know, the 1984. Some of it's correct, some of it's not. Some of it's lies, some of it's truth. And you're never quite sure what to go. So you go, well, how else can we find it? Oh, well, maybe if we can find someone who was alive at the time, we could ask them. But then how do we know if they're telling the truth? Because it's hundreds of years later. And, you know, even if they, no, I say, who was alive at the time? Because, you know, now when I've spoiled it, there's other people in cold sleep. So some people have been alive all the way through. So, you know, we have to believe what we read, or we have to believe what we're told, and we have to believe that the evidence that we're seeing is true evidence, you know, because our eyes aren't deceiving us, or our instruments aren't deceiving us, or our cameras aren't deceiving us. It's really difficult. We can't know for sure. We never have access to the facts. There's obviously all these other conspiracies and lies and manipulations in between us and the facts. So then we have to rely on belief. Now, Hugh Howey could have continued as before, but when a book, or when a writing style, or when a series of stories is based around twists, it's based around the rug being pulled out from underneath you, it's based around the foundation of belief, or the foundation for action based on that belief has been undermined at every turn. Belief, by that point, is really no good. You can't keep saying to people, or you can't keep presenting characters going, actually, this is the way it works. No, it isn't. And now you thought that was the way it works. Actually, there's this other thing which negates all that. Oh, and you think that was the truth. Actually, that's not the truth. It's not the truth. And like this, so like you've got to at that point take belief off the table. I say Howie could have, like Hugh Howie could have kept on in this way, but I think it would have like strained the reader. They're just going, well, how do we know anything is true? How do we know what's going on? So like he then comes up with a way of continually undermining what we already knew. And he takes it in different directions, which is you can't just have characters or later characters finding out stuff about happened way in the past. And that's why he goes with the prequel route. That's why he goes with the backstory route. We actually have to have somebody there in the past, seeing what's going on and actually believing what they're seeing. It's like, okay, this person is doing this and this person is doing that. So now we no longer have to believe what's happening. We can just say, okay, is Hugh Howie telling the truth of the world? Like, is his character actually seeing the truth of the world? And if so, great. Then we can believe it. Then we can trust it. But he does something really, really clever in that first story. It's because he also has this thing going on where, you know, the person who is seeing what's going on doesn't understand what everything that's going on. And it's only we, having read Wool, we understand what's going on, but the character at the time doesn't. So we're then picking up a lot of facts. So we don't need to believe anything anymore. Or put it this way, we don't need, like within the world, we now know the history rather than believe it, even if the people at the time didn't believe it or wasn't quite sure what was going on. And then he does more stuff with the backstory because, you know, the whole idea of people waking up out of cold sleep, but their memories have been mostly wiped. You know, they're on these drugs to suppress their long-term memory, so they can only remember what's happened like a few weeks before since their initiation and things. And that's another great way of doing it, that you're never quite sure what to believe. You're never quite sure what's going on. You're never quite sure like what your role in the whole situation was previous to your cold sleep. And you're not quite sure who's really in charge because you've been told you're in charge. But there's this other guy over there. Is he in charge? Not really quite sure. There's all that kind of stuff. But it's great to see it. What does work really well with this is that he's gone, okay, we've got to take belief off the table. You've actually got to see what did happen. And then you'll have to believe, or say you'll have to know that's what happened rather than believe what happened. And then going forward, these facts will be the things that control us through to the end of the shift omnibus. And that's really great. However, as I said before, by showing too much what happened, it kind of robs me of caring. Like, if you're going on for a mysterious reason, I mean, there's two different ways of looking at this. One is like, you go, okay, we've got to save the world. Yeah, we've got to save, this is in the Matrix. We've got to save the world. Okay, got to save the world. We've got to save Zion. Yes, we're the last hope for humanity. Save Zion. Oh, Zion is going to be like this. And they get Morpheus and they say, tell us where Zion is, or tell us the codes to coordinate codes to Zion. He's like, no, I won't. It's like, wow, Zion, the last bastion of humanity under the machine overlords. And then in the second movie, we see Zion, and I'm just not interested. And like, once I see Zion, it's like, well, it's not really worth saving. Or maybe it is worth saving, but I just don't really care that much anymore. And again, like prequel-wise, you can go back to, I guess, like, let's go back to Star Wars, of course. You go, well, there's the Jedi Order. So when Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda are the last Jedi, and you're like, oh, Jedi, what a Jedi. Well, we've only got these two representatives of Jedi, and one's this cool old guy with a beard and a cloak, and this other guy's a little alien thing. And you're like, well, both of these guys could be Jedi, so I guess Jedi could be anything. There's just like this mind thing stuff, and it's like, well, everyone expects, well, Luke is going to reestablish the Jedi Order. Well, of course he does. You know, there's loads of sequel books about that, you know, book, well, not that I've read them, but I guess, you know, guessing from all of the wider material, that Luke Skywalker reestablishing the Jedi Order is a main part of it. And of course, why wouldn't you? Because the Jedi Order sounds really great. And then, of course, you watch the prequels, and it's like, okay, people sitting around. I mean, you know, there's like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon Jinn. They're pretty badass. They're doing, you know, things that you expect the Jedi to do and getting on with it. But you're like, well, okay, well, I guess that's a Jedi, but the Jedi Order? Boring. And then they get into trouble in the second one, and they can kind of barely defeat a droid army, even like loads of them, all the Jedi just turn up and they kind of mostly defeated, and then the stormtroopers have to come in and save them. You're just like, wait a second. And then at the end, they're like, not like I always imagined at the end they'll be hunted down by the Sith. Yeah, the Sith Lord are gonna hunt down the Jedi one by one, it'd be awesome. No, just they all get shot by blasters. And I'm like, well, didn't George Lucas see episode 4 where, you know, Han Solo says, well, I'd rather have a good blaster by my side, you know, know, when they're actually playing around with the lightsaber. And I thought, well, I thought that was meant to be a comment to say that the lightsaber was always going to be better than the blaster, and the blaster was an inelegant weapon, and that the lightsaber was... But no, all of them just get shot by blasters. And oh, I guess there's that one which gets killed. But this is in episode 3. Nobody remembers this. Nobody ever really cares about this. But it's just like, well, why? Like, how come they're all just shot by blasters? That's the way that the... And he's just going, well, why should Luke Skywalker reestablish the Jedi Order if all they're going to do? I mean, if the Jedi Order can all just die by blaster, well, that's no good, is it? I mean, I know it was all double crossing and politics and stuff, but you just think, well, is it really worth saving? So, yeah. What was I saying about that? Yeah, like you say, when you go back and see prequel stuff and see the real reasons and see the real backstory, you're just like, well, okay, well, I guess I'll keep reading then. I mean, it's not as exciting as I thought it was. Well, actually, it was an exciting story. Like if the last story in the full omnibus had been like where the silos come from, like that real immediate, that would have been like, oh, okay, well, that's nice to read as a pretty interesting story of how it was set up. But like, either you need to have that like way, 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 way at the beginning, or way, 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 way at the end. Because by having it in the middle, it goes, well, that's all the mystery. There's all that, you know, a lot of the mystery. Not all of it, of course. There's still loads of conspiracy and loads of facts hiding in plain sight. But you go, well, that's really takes away that big chunk of the mystery there. And now back to the people living in mystery. But you're always like, well, that doesn't, it kind of spoilt it a bit in a way. So either have that at the very beginning or have it like way past the end. So yeah, the book is like a demonstration of I'm trying to find a way to finish off this. Yeah, it's like the book itself is a demonstration of how belief is useless in the face of facts and action. But the continually undermining belief couldn't really be sustained for a whole new book in the same way that Wool has. So I think that by showing the past, Hugh Howey can like show the facts, but it's to the detriment of the stories, which I think I've just said that now 3 times, but I'm going around. So let's how to do this, how I would fix this. I think First Shift is good as is. It's short enough. It's good enough to stand on its own. I don't think it would need it to be right here at the beginning. I think, like I say, it could have been later. Leave Second Shift exactly how it is. It's really good. It's a really great story. It has to follow First Shift, but anyway, just leave it. That's really good. And then I'd say Third Shift, what is it? There's Third Shift. I've closed my notes here. Not looking around here. No. Third Shift Pact. What I do with Third Shift Pact is got it completely. There's some really interesting stuff happening in the command silo. Take that. Have it as a single story. Cut out any reference to what's happening in the wall silo, in the non-command silo, because we know how that plans out already. We don't need to see all of that. That doesn't. You know, those characters don't contribute anything more, but there's some really good characters, a really good story and mystery going on in its own right there. So have that, and then also cut out all of the backstory from that one person who was mentioned in Wool. And now, as I mentioned before, we get just, you know, it's an interesting story in its own right, but I reckon that story should be separated out and inserted into the Wool omnibus right before that character is introduced. And I think that character is introduced in story number 3 or 4. Maybe story number 4. So before story number 4, stick that in. So then when they turn up, we have the benefit of like connecting them with them far better, because we already know everything that they've already been through. And then when they turn up, you're like, oh, this is this person. And their story is now going to intersect with the main character from Wool. And I think it would, you know, that story would fit in way better in the Wool than in Shift, in the Wool omnibus than the Shift omnibus. So that's the way I'd have it. So all of the material in this book is good. The order messes it up, and the context that is put up against each other messes it up. Like, constantly switching away from an interesting story to the backstory of a character which I know isn't going to lead anywhere. And I was like, oh, hopefully there's a really, really big twist at the end of this, and it'll be really great, and it'll tell me lots more. But then if there was a big twist or any major revelation, I missed all of that. The writing is really good. The imagery is good. There's great dialogue, lots of interesting conversations, lots of great characters. But just the story just didn't hold up. And when the story doesn't hold up, the rest fall apart. When the collection is about short stories with twists and reveals and all that kind of stuff, when I stop caring about the twists and when I've already worked it out and the sense of mystery is gone, the whole thing kind of fell apart. So for me, this was quite a disappointing follow-up to The Wool Omnibus, which I gave 4.5 stars, and this one I'm only going to give 3 stars. It is worth reading, but if you read Wool, keep reading through, but it is a big step down due to massive structural issues. That said, I will read the next collection of short stories in the next omnibus, whatever that next omnibus is called, the Silo Omnibus or whatever it is. I think it's well written, and I look forward to seeing what happens in the future. And there is like another big mystery that's going on off to one side, which has now been mentioned in both books, in both omnibuses. Now I need that to be answered, because that's what I think that's actually going to be more important than anything that's happened so far. And it's a bit annoying knowing that there's this other thing happening off to one side, which is probably more important than everything that's happened so far. And I read through to the end of another full book, and I'm still no closer to knowing what's going on over there. So that was a bit disappointing. Well, not disappointing. It just gives me something else to look forward to reading about, and hopefully the quality stays up. I do think that, like, when it gets to the end, Hugh Harry could, like, go, okay, now that I have all of this story and these short stories, I reckon there's probably a way of formatting it a bit and swapping some of the material around. Like I said, he could take some of this material out of the Shift Omnibus, put it into the Wool Omnibus, maybe take a little bit out of there, or, you know, intersperse some different information all the way through. I think knowing that there's a command silo, it isn't a big surprise when it comes up in the Wool Omnibus. I think that could have been mentioned like earlier on, and we can follow the story of what's happening in the Command Omnibus even throughout some of the stuff that's happening in Wool, and it would still work. There'd still be lots of stuff going on there that could still work, but that's up to you, Howie. I'm not going to tell him what to do with his stories, except I already have. But that's in my review. That's how I'd say I would fix it. Of course, it's up to him. He probably doesn't even think it needs fixing. Although there are a few spelling issues I saw when he says that he took the mic, and I'm like, hey, you spelled Mike as in the name Mike. It's capitalized in anything. M-I-K-E. And Mike is actually short for microphone. So it's Mike is M-I-C. And let me have a look at some. There's a few other spelling mistakes as well. Mike. Or, of course, he was perfectly right. It's of course he was personally right. Or maybe that's the only spelling mistakes. Oh, okay. Well, that's not too bad. I only noticed 3 spelling mistakes in this, unlike a previous Kindle ebook where I was just reading before, a non-fiction book, which I found quite a few more mistakes, but some of them were just Kindle formatting mistakes. Right, that's enough. I'm just waffling now. You see, I didn't have that many notes, and I went 46 minutes already, 47 minutes already, which is a good length to talk about a science fiction book like this. So, if you've got any feedback or anything like that, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. Also, go across and check out goodreads.com. You can also chat with other people. You can start a new thread in the SFBRP listeners group and chat with people there. Or just reply and discuss on my review of this book on goodreads.com, which you'll find there. What are we up to now? SFBRP 191, so coming up to 200. So if you've got any special, like any ideas for a special 200th episode, like a topic that you want me to talk about, like a non-book thing or anything like that, just email me, luke@juggler.net. I might be able to work out something fun to do. The next episode that we're going to do is with me and Juliana. We're going to review Rendezvous with Rama. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBoge there, and check out my blog. I'm always posting like videos and photos and music and lots of interesting stuff to my blog, which is at lukeboge.com/blog. And finally, check out sfbrp.com and click on the episode lists link, and you can see a list of all the episodes that I've recorded so far, all the books I've reviewed. You can sort them by star rating, by author, by episode list, things like that. It's an interesting resource to check out books that I've previously reviewed and what I thought about them in an easy, organized fashion. So that's it for me. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll catch you next time.